Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sweeney. On this show, we talk to early stage founders and investors, diving into product, business model, markets, and venture capital. I'm joined by expert guest hosts to cover sectors like fintech, direct-to-consumer, biotech, and the new space industry. This episode is part of our series on fintech and is co-hosted by SVB Capital's head of fintech investing, Denny Boyle. Today on the show, we're talking to Andy Bromberg, CEO of Eco, a consumer fintech. Eco is a fascinating company because it looks like any other consumer fintech, a digital checking account like Chime or SoFi. But on the back end, it's built on crypto, specifically US dollar coin. That makes a company interesting in two ways. First, most consumer fintech companies are building a better user experience on top of a legacy banking and financial system. Eco is going around the financial system altogether by using new rails built on crypto. Second, it's one of the only projects from the world of decentralized finance to have a consumer-facing front end that barely mentions crypto at all, which is on purpose. Andy and the team at Eco believe you can bring more people into crypto by obscuring the technical points and focusing on the benefits than the alternative. To build out that mission, Eco just raised $26 million from Andreessen Horowitz's crypto practice back in March. For more context on DeFi and the fintech market more broadly, I talked to Denny Boyle, SVB Capital's head of fintech investing, our sponsor, and resident fintech expert.
Thanks for having me, as always, Joe. And I do need to cast out that I'm by no means a DeFi expert, but I've obviously spent a ton of time in all kinds of fintech. The thing that stands out to me with Eco is, on the surface, it's a consumer fintech, but all the magic and all the DeFi is below the surface. And the way that they allow consumers to use their products are on rails that are different than any other consumer fintech out there. So I'm interested in your conversation with Andy to hear about how they connect those pieces so that consumers can have a card in hand, buy from merchants like they typically would, feeling like it's a normal transaction, but under the surface, the mechanism to affect that transaction be wildly different, and in the process, reap benefits that you can't get from normal consumer fintech plays.
Yeah, so you're talking about actually bridging the gap between crypto infrastructure and regular payments. The other thing that I think makes a company incredibly unique and interesting is just that they're one of the only DeFi projects that is accessible to someone who's not crypto literate, you might say.
I think that's a great point, because when it comes to consumer fintech, just like with many consumer products, while it's nebulous to value, brand is everything. And how companies market themselves and brand themselves is largely, and particularly early, very critical to how they build their user base and how they grow those first 100, 200, 500,000 users to hopefully help the brand explode. And as skeptics of the crypto industry have claimed for years, is there's no killer consumer app. And it's usually marketed by crypto for crypto, which is a different beast. And if you look at the way that Andy and the Eco team are bringing Eco to market, it's kind of buy crypto for the masses. They're explaining it in a way that's a lot less intimidating for the masses to understand, which I think is a really key point here.
And if this works, if you win at that, you're one of the few DeFi projects that has access to mainstream consumer dollars. People who don't know anything about crypto, who don't have a Coinbase account or a wallet, potentially tapping into a different market that other DeFi projects, the crypto for crypto, can't.
Yeah, that's right. You hopefully have that. And then as they continue to improve their product and scale, there's a lot of different directions that they can go without some of the limitations that traditional fintechs have.
Great. Well, Denny, I know our schedules didn't line up for this one, so I'm going to be on my own for this interview. But thank you, as always, for the background. Andy, I have been really excited to have this conversation. There are a lot of fintech companies out there who I've been talking to, but there are very few that are actually changing the underlying infrastructure that also have a mass consumer product on the market. So I have a ton of questions for you, but just to start us off, to start at the top, what is Eco?
What is Eco? Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Awesome to be here. Eco is a single place to save, spend, send, and make money all in one place. It's a consumer financial product. It's an app, mobile app, where you deposit your dollars when your dollars are in the app, they earn 2.5 to 5% APY. It starts at 2.5, goes up to 5 as you refer friends, which is 200 times better than what your bank will pay you. And you can spend money at major merchants. Right now, that's Amazon, Uber, DoorDash, Instacart. Get 5% cash back. We've got a bunch more features coming to try and put your whole financial life in one place and build the most rewarding financial product possible. What you'll notice there is that that was all about what the experience is for consumers. We actually don't talk a whole lot about some of the stuff we're doing, at least publicly on our website, on the back end to make things easier and better and actually offer those to consumers. And I'm happy to talk about it here. Of course, we can get into it. But when people ask, what's Eco? That's the answer. It's this amazing, rewarding, aligned consumer financial product for saving and spending, where you can put your whole financial life in one place, no headaches, and get the best benefits possible. And then when people really dig, or I come on a podcast, we can get deeper into what's actually happening behind the scenes and how we enable those benefits.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about it is I went looking on your website and around the internet for kind of what's actually going on. And I clicked through 3 pages on your website's blog before I got to the word blockchain. How are you getting to that 2.5% back? Are you like staking Ethereum? Or I think I saw somewhere that it runs on US dollar coin. So how does it work on the back end?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when you put dollars into Eco, they get turned into USDC, US dollar coin, which is a dollar-backed stablecoin. It was issued, it's issued by an organization called Center, which was created by Coinbase and Circle. So two really big trusted entities. And it's, yeah, dollar-backed stablecoin. So one USDC is $1 always. You can always exchange them one-to-one for each other back and forth. It's basically just a digital dollar. It's a dollar on the blockchain. And what that means is that you get all the benefits of the dollar. It's always worth a dollar. You can always exchange it for that. But all the benefits of being on-chain, which means fast, easy, effortless transactions anywhere in the world. And the way we get the 2.5% APY for users is literally just those USDC are lent out to big regulated financial institutions in the crypto space. The crypto space is effectively under-dollarized. And there's a bunch of reasons for this that we could get into, but there's massive demand for dollars and, by extension, dollar-backed stablecoins in crypto for financial actors in the crypto space, since they're willing to borrow that USDC at really high rates. And so we're able to fund that 2.5 to 5% APY by going and lending USDC out to those entities.
What's the benefit of running a consumer financial app on USDC versus the traditional banking system?
A bunch of things. Well, first of all, there's this massive demand for USDC in the crypto space. You can earn really high yield on it and pass that back to users. There's a massive benefit there. And then USDC is just way faster, easier to transact. You're familiar with this. I'm sure many of your listeners are, but ACH transfers in the United States take days, and also business days, not just days, but business days. And wire transfers take money, high fees. And USDC transfers require neither of those. They're fast, they're cheap. And so it's just way more efficient to build a system on this digital dollar, this dollar on the blockchain, versus using the existing banking financial system. And also from a very tactical implementation perspective, it's just easier. Interfacing with the banking system from a programmatic perspective is not pleasant. These systems were built decades ago. It's the same systems. There's all sorts of weird edge cases, errors, problems, and blockchain technology. Well, it's not perfect. It's way better. And so you've got much more certainty dealing with it than dealing with the banking system from a programmatic perspective.
Yeah, bank APIs can be tough, to say the least. So I've heard a lot about staking Ethereum, staking different crypto. Can you talk about how that USDC gets lent out, why it needs to be lent out, the risks involved, and like what that staking really entails on the back end?
Yeah, so it's really, at least in kind of the crypto sense of the word, it's really not staking here. Staking in crypto generally refers to interacting directly with smart contracts on some blockchain and depositing some sort of crypto asset in those smart contracts and earning yield out of that. There's a bunch of different kind of formulations of that. I just described it in kind of the most generic sense. What we do is really very straightforward and almost verging on old world. It's just loans with centralized single counterparties. So we do not put users' funds on smart contracts and these like new DeFi systems and all of that. We just lend it out to institutions, just like you would lend dollars or any other asset to an institution and they would pay you to borrow it. Now, in the future, it could be that we start to offer the option to take advantage of more interesting DeFi products for our users. So we may say to you, hey, by default, we're going to pay you this 2.5% to 5% APY. But if you want to, you could stake this asset on this system that we've integrated with and get a higher yield. But by the way, here are more risks that come with that. And that idea actually fits into kind of a broader philosophy at Eco. We have this phrase that we say all the time internally, which is blow minds one step at a time. And it sounds kind of silly, but it's actually a really important guiding principle for us. A lot of what's happening in fintech and crypto right now, it's big ideas and they're radical ideas. And a lot of products in the space try to blow people's minds all the way, all at once. And for people that have been in crypto for a long time, that works. You've got enough context to kind of grasp these ideas and play with them. But for people that don't have that same level of experience, it doesn't work. When someone tries to tell you something radical and different, just right from the outset, you have a tough time believing it, understanding it, interfacing with it. And so instead, what Eco strives to do is get you there one step at a time. And that means we're not going to start by throwing words like DeFi and staking and smart contract and Aave and Compound and all these things in your face. We're going to keep it really simple, straightforward, and use terms and words that you're familiar with from your existing life, and then progressively give you more and more of a taste. And as you get comfortable with each of those steps, we'll start to reveal the next step to you. And we believe that's the way to create change in a massive audience, is to take them there at their own pace, speak to them at their level, and blow their mind one step at a time instead of trying to get all the way to that end state right from the beginning.
Yeah, it's a pretty drastically different approach than most of the other DeFi projects. You can work with consumers who don't know what NFT stands for. How did you come to develop this idea and come at it with this approach? And why aren't other DeFi projects taking this kind of stance?
I think it's a pretty natural progression. You know, as with any new technology, the technology starts by being developed for the enthusiasts. And the people who are really deep in it, it is developed for the technologists themselves. That's not a bad thing. That's natural. That's how the early cycles of technology development happen. The Homebrew Computer Club was not building computers for the mass market at the very beginning. It was building computers for computer nerds. That's great. And I think that progression always happens. And at some point, not my phrasing, but you got to cross the chasm. And I think we're at that point right now where the benefits exist. And there's this sales cliche, which is sell benefits, not features. That the way to sell something to someone or get someone interested in something is to tell them how it will benefit them, not tell them how it works. Tell the person that this dishwasher is going to make your dishes really clean with minimal water and, you know, and a really fast speed. Don't tell them this dishwasher shoots out water at 1200 RPM and this, that, and the other thing. You got to talk about the benefits, not the features. And at the end of the day, that's what Eco is. It's a product that gives users benefits, doesn't necessarily show them the features, how it works behind the scenes, unless the user wants to know, and then messages it in that way. And I think that's where we are as an industry now, is that it's time to start talking about the benefits and messaging it that way. And just one analogy that I would draw here is that if you use Robinhood, which is not a crypto product at all, well, they've got crypto, but at its core, a mainstream financial product, they don't use the technical terms. Robinhood doesn't say, hey, use Fedwire to send money here. Robinhood doesn't say, put this stock under your name in your DTCC account. They don't say these things. They talk about the benefit to the user and what it means. And it's just time for us to do the same thing with crypto. Stop saying all the technical crypto words and instead just talk about what it means for the user. And of course, as with Robinhood, if you want to learn more, you can. And we'll give you that knowledge. You can go in our FAQs. You can talk to our team. We'll answer questions. But I don't think it's critical up front to talk about blockchain and wallets and keys in the same way it's not critical to talk about Fedwire and DTCC and all of those concepts in the traditional world.
I'm also pretty curious about how you got into crypto in general. This isn't a space that people fall into, and you seem tailor-built for building a business like this. How did that come to be?
I was really lucky. So I was in university, and I had a professor named Balaji Srinivasan, who some of your listeners may know, formerly CTO of Coinbase, before that founded Earn.com, and before that was a GP at Andreessen Horowitz, but before that was a professor, and I took a class of his, and a bunch of us who took the class kept hanging out after the class. We just really enjoyed spending time with each other and with Balaji. And we wanted a way to formalize just hanging out and talking about stuff. And Balaji said, we're going to start the Stanford Bitcoin group. And all of us at that point were like, yeah, this Bitcoin thing, it's kind of interesting. This was like 2012, 2013. We're not sure, but yeah, it seems interesting. We're down to spend some time on it. And he convinced us, and we ended up obviously, clearly getting totally obsessed with Bitcoin and crypto more broadly as the space evolved. And so owe a lot to him for kind of giving us that push, that shove into being interested in the space.
Yeah, it's amazing. I didn't know he was a professor at Stanford before that, and that he created a club of, I imagine now, a lot of founders in the Bitcoin space.
Almost all founders. Yeah. Everyone's done it.
Your revenue model is you get a percentage for lending out the USDC, and then you give a percentage, pass it back along to the user at the end of the day?
Yeah. So when you start to cut out all these middlemen, these rewards start to get really meaningful. There's opportunity there for there to be margin for Eco, even in giving these amazing rewards back to users. Over time, our goal is to build just a more and more aligned system. And so we're doing whatever we can to pass as much benefit back to users. And we've got some really interesting plans down the pipeline in terms of what we're going to do there to develop that, in part centering around this concept of Eco points, which we haven't talked about yet. But this is our reward point in the app that you earn when you save money or spend money. Right now, it's totally useless, doesn't do anything. But over time, we want to turn this point into something really, really useful. And we hope over time that will allow us to push all the margin in dollar terms back to users, but find ways to monetize and see upside based on the success of this kind of Eco point reward economy that we're building. And so there's more to come there.
How do you expect the points to work long-term? What's the vision there?
We're a little tight-lipped on that right now, and we'll have a lot more to say on that in the coming months. But at a very high level, I think there's a possibility to begin to see the development of real rewards economies. One analogy I draw sometimes to think about Chase or Amex points. Chase and Amex points live in their own little world. I've got a bunch of Chase Ultimate Rewards points. I've got Amex points, and they can do a few things. But it's an interesting thought experiment to start to draw that out a little bit more. Say Chase. Chase has these points. What if Chase started opening up that ecosystem more and more? What if Chase started to try to pay their vendors in Chase points? What if Chase started accepting payments from customers in Chase points? Why can't this point become some sort of medium of exchange for a broader economy than just statement credits and transacting with travel partners? And I think that's a really interesting thought space, in part spurred by the development of the digital asset industry and us seeing the flexibility that new assets can have and the utility these new assets can have. And so we're looking at kind of exploring that train of thought and saying, well, if we can develop this reward point, these eco points, what could that turn into and how can we see that develop over time? And how are we going to see more broadly, even outside of Eco, the development of rewards economies happen over the coming years? It feels like we haven't seen the end of that yet. And it feels like Chase points and Amex points are not at the ultimate conclusion of what a reward point can be. And you even see this in other places. Bakkt, for example, has a product that starts to allow the idea of exchanging between different reward points. Seems like an interesting next step and something that would be useful to people. And so I think it's cool to explore that problem space and think about how that might develop.
So Eco points could essentially be like an Eco coin, its own digital asset. The major question being like, why would people accept Eco points? There aren't that many digital assets that are widely accepted. Although I guess on the back end, you are working mostly with people in the crypto space. How do you think about that?
It's a wide open question and not something that we have ready answers to. I think the general view is that it feels like there's something there on how a reward economy can develop over time. And it doesn't mean that you have to leap straight to everyone accepts everything. Because certainly even for Chase points and Amex points, it's a relatively limited set of things you can do with those points. And so I think even starting to progress towards some version of more extensible reward points is really interesting. And you just see where it takes you from there. And I think existing reward point systems have a lot of flexibility already that could be extended. And I think starting a point system with that intention could lead to some really interesting ground.
Beyond Eco, what are some of the things that you're most interested in DeFi in general and in the crypto space?
Well, I'd be remiss not to mention Bitcoin first in the crypto space, which is by far on a personal level in terms of liquid assets, my biggest holding, just incredibly long Bitcoin. In terms of other things happening in DeFi, what's most interesting to me is a couple things. One is just innovation in mechanism and incentive design. So we're seeing all sorts of interesting ideas emerge from a governance perspective, from an incentive perspective. And I think it speaks to a broader trend in crypto, which is that crypto is allowing these massive concurrent experiments of economic incentives. Every new token, every new asset has its own economic system. And we get to see in real time how people respond to those incentives and how people act around them. And I just think that's a fascinating space to be looking at. More specifically in DeFi, what's really interesting is that we're seeing people really sit back and think about what financial primitives exist. What are the building blocks of a financial system? Maybe there's lending. Maybe there's this sort of like staking concept, locking up tokens that starts to exist. Maybe there's leveraged trading or borrowing. And you start to see all of these different pieces coexist and click together in interesting ways. And you see these primitives, these individual building blocks of finance start to get broken down to their most basic form and then rechained together. And that to me is the real innovation here, that the world has been trending for such a long time towards centralization in finance, towards single entities doing everything for you all at once, towards really complicated financial instruments that derivatives whose legal documents are hundreds of pages long. And DeFi is saying, wait a second, let's turn that around. Let's pull these things back to the smallest possible building blocks that could exist, the simplest possible financial primitives, and then see how we can click these together in really transparent ways to create interesting structures. And so that's what I'm excited about seeing from an intellectual perspective, is the decomposition of financial products into these simpler forms.
Think about those primitives and the approach you're taking at Eco. It feels like one of the biggest barriers to growth of DeFi, and it's obviously been exploding. I think Ethereum is up like 9x in the past 9 months or something. But it feels like one of the biggest barriers to universal acceptance are the on-ramps. To just get into working with these different building blocks, you have to have turned dollars into crypto and then have that in a wallet and then be able to do things with that. So why do you think there aren't more companies taking your kind of approach to on-ramps? And then what else do you think needs to be done to just make the on-ramps easier?
I agree, but I would actually frame it a little bit differently. There's a lot of talk about on-ramps. I actually think the right way to think about this is just consumer products. Because, you know, again, if we draw an analogy to the traditional world, and I think this is where people, especially in the crypto space, get tripped up, because everyone, myself included in a lot of ways, we're so obsessed with crypto itself. Like I just gave you a whole answer about mechanism and incentive design and DeFi primitives and all of that. No one cares about that in the rest of the world. That's me as a crypto nerd who's been in the space for 9 years, loving that. And the reality is people don't care about that. Again, they care about the benefits they get. No one cares about on-ramping to DeFi. No one cares about on-ramping to these financial primitives. No one cares about experimenting with mechanism design. When I say no one, I mean broadly the market as a whole. And instead what they want is just products that make sense. And I think in the same way, we wouldn't talk about, when it got started, the biggest problem with the repo market is limited on-ramps. It doesn't make any sense. You would never say that. Like that's not a problem with the financial primitive of some sort of lending market. The challenge is, what are the products that people want to build and use? And I just think there's, at some level, a little bit of a mismatch in skill sets. Most of the people in crypto are deep crypto people, not consumer products people, that are thinking about how to offer products to consumers leveraging this technology. And again, that's a beautiful thing. These people are so deep in crypto, they're able to push the envelope in terms of technological developments and designing these systems from a game theoretic perspective, which is amazing, but they're just not thinking about products. And so now the time is to sit back, look at all of these things, this DeFi technology, all of it that we now have access to, and think, well, okay, we now know what is possible from this stuff. Let's think about how to match that up with consumer desires and build that. And I think there's going to be a massive wave. Eco is just one of what I expect to be many, many projects doing this, where we sat back and said, guess what people want? Yield and cash back. That's what they want. And so, oh, look, we can leverage that technology for some of that. amazing. Let's use that on the back end, but let's talk to people just in terms of products that they want.
Do you plan to use Eco as a way to start utilizing some of those other financial primitives on the back end while having one of the largest consumer on-ramps into USDC?
I think that'd be awesome. Yeah, and we will use them if our customers want them. We're responsive to our customers. It pains me sometimes that we're more responsive to our customers than to, you know, my own crypto intellectual curiosities, but that's the right way to do it. And no matter how interesting I think a primitive is, if it doesn't provide direct value to a customer, it's not worth integrating. But yeah, of course, over time, I would expect us to move more and more into the space and offer users more and more options.
And on the front end side, you're fundamentally one of these new banks, which is a digital first bank. So how do you think about competition with the traditional banks, but also the Chimes and Brex and Mercury are business focused, but there are a ton that are all in this space competing for consumer dollars.
Tons. I mean, the first thing I'll say, and we're very explicit about this right on our homepage, is Eco is not a bank. And you know, the reason we say that is twofold. One, it's just factually true. We're not a bank. That's kind of simple and straightforward. But the second piece is it is in some sense the easiest way to understand what we are. We are not a bank, but in some way, as you're suggesting here, we can serve a vaguely similar function to a bank for you. We're a place to save and spend. The benefits and the trade-offs we offer are just different. We offer 2.5% to 5% APY. No neobank offers anything close to that. It's not even in range. But in exchange, there are certain trade-offs. We don't offer FDIC insurance. We're not a bank. And so when you put your funds in Eco, it's not FDIC insured. And we don't have a full set of features yet. We don't have a card product that you can use to spend anywhere. We only let you spend at certain merchants. And so for us, it's all about expressing this set of trade-offs to users and explaining to them what Eco is and what Eco isn't, and then letting them make their own decision. And what we found is that for a lot of people, for their daily saving and spending activity, Eco makes a lot of sense for them and they love it and our users love the product, but it does occupy kind of a slightly different place than a lot of these other products that people are using. And we also tend to serve just a different audience. So most Eco users come from a big bank. They don't come from the neobanks. And the neobanks like Chime and others, which are incredible businesses, they just serve a different customer segment than we do. And so we're most often reaching just a different sort of consumer.
When you talk about merchants, so if you don't have a card product, how exactly can consumers spend? Do you have partnerships set up where those merchants will take USDC, or how does that work?
We're working on expanding this over time, and we do eventually want to allow users to spend anywhere. But for now, the spending actually happens on gift card rails. So when you spend in Eco, you go into the app, you type in the exact amount of money you want to spend at the merchant, and we work with those merchants' kind of gift card programs, and we generate programmatically a gift card code for exactly the amount of money you want to spend. So you type in $57.16 because you want to spend that at Uber. We go and we generate a gift card for exactly that amount of money that you can just, with a single tap, punch into Uber and pay for your transaction.
Yeah, that's really interesting because you can buy gift cards in cash, essentially. So what do you think will be the expansion of those rails? As more companies take crypto, I imagine there'll be other rails that you can plug into. But how do you expand that at the moment?
We do it kind of merchant by merchant right now. But I think the way to really expand it is at some point you do have to hook into the traditional debit and credit card rails in some way to allow for spending anywhere. And that's certainly on our roadmap to work out what exactly that product looks like.
And on that point, thinking about what you've built at Eco so far across all of these different dimensions, what do you think is the biggest win for the company so far? What has been the biggest moment for you in that sense?
It's a really interesting question. There's a lot of things I could call out. I think one of the things that's most interesting here is just the messaging. And it sounds silly, but the way we talk to people, and this is a credit to the team that's been working on it for a long time, it really resonates. The way we talk to people publicly, the way we talk to people when we're onboarding them one-on-one, lots of user feedback, lots of just testing messages and seeing what resonates, lots of talking to friends and experts and running concepts by them, a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. And that's just how it goes, is you keep trying and you find these kind of magical words, phrases, trains of thought, sequences of ideas that start to resonate. And I tend to think of it as a very organic process. I'm really proud of what we've done on that front so far, but I know that in 24 months, we're going to look back and say, man, we had the most immature, ineffective messaging in June 2021, and it's gotten so much better. And so it's just about leaving yourself open to that improvement. One of the big challenges there, of course, is that different people are at different places. And so you need to figure out how to talk to multiple different people and in a way that makes sense to all of them. And I'm really proud of the Eco team for nailing that from an onboarding perspective and from a public marketing perspective.
As you build out that back end and as you bring on more users and then you have more USDC that you can then deploy to bring in a higher interest for those users, what do you think the most interesting financial primitive is on the market that you'd like to add to EcoStack?
What is the most interesting financial primitive on the market? Well, I think there's two questions there. There's which financial primitive do you want to add to EcoStack? That question is answered from a user perspective. And I think for us, probably insurance, adding more layers of insurance is a really interesting financial primitive, and how we can integrate that, I think, would be a cool challenge. And that's something that's being developed by a lot of these DeFi projects. From an intellectual perspective, what's the most interesting financial primitive on the stack? It probably has something to do with the, as of yet, not totally solved problems of identity and reputation, and how you can break decentralized identity down and leverage that in these systems. Because you start to realize in the traditional world how many financial services and financial interactions depend on a sense of identity. And in DeFi, there's no identity. You don't know who a person is. A single person can have many wallets. You don't know who's who. And so figuring out kind of from an intellectual perspective, decentralized identity, I think is a very cool related problem space to some of these financial primitives.
On the insurance side, insurance seems like a really interesting thing to be building on DeFi because it has so many kind of financial components when you think about the float and the premiums and pricing risk and things like that, which I can imagine a lot of different ways every single one of those aspects could be utilized. How is that being developed right now? Could you give us like a quick overview?
There's so many things that are happening in that space right now within DeFi. The biggest one is insurance of smart contract risk. So risks around smart contract hacks or ways that smart contracts get exploited and insuring the funds in there. So Nexus Mutual and Cozy, there's a bunch of these DeFi projects that are working on that. And that's where it's starting. But I'm really interested to see it start to expand out from there into even non-smart contract related use cases and how we see kind of the primitive of what insurance is start to emerge. And I think I don't know that that's a fully answered question. What is insurance at its core and how can you break into the smallest possible primitive? I think we'll see a lot of experimentation with that over the coming years, even coming months.
I just talked to Travis Hedge, who's the CEO of Vouch, a new business insurance company, and he talked a little bit about things like earthquake insurance and like very specific single product companies that are doing things like that, which is fascinating. So my last question for you is on your vision for Eco. Where do you see and where would you like to see Eco in 25 years?
These are always the hardest questions because if I could predict what the future looks like in 25 years, it would be amazing. But I would love to see Eco as just the pure substrate for all financial transactions in the world. If people were using this better, more aligned system that works for the benefit of its community as the substrate, as the medium for all financial transactions, we will have been a massive success. And so that's what we're working towards, starting with this really straightforward, really beneficial, really aligned consumer product. Again, working for the benefit of our community, working towards eventually serving as that supporting layer for all money movement, value movement in the world. That's where we're going.
Exciting to see that you have so many consumers already starting to turn dollars into crypto. So this has been really interesting, and thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward to having you back on the show once Eco is the universal substrate.
Hopefully sooner than that. But thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.